Hey everybody, today's episode is sponsored by Penzu, your personal journal in the cloud. Penzu is where millions of people keep their most private thoughts, all locked with a secret password. Go to penzu.com, that's spelled P-E-N-Z-U now, and sign up for a free account. For extra security and fun customizations, go to penzu.com/GoPro on your computer and use promo code Radical for $5 off your Pro or Pro Plus subscription. Once again, that's promo code Radical. Now let's get to the show.
This is The Radical Therapist, a space where we explore the intersections of collaborative therapy, philosophy, art, and science and technology in a post-Freud, post-psychology world.
Welcome to The Radical Therapist. This is your host, Chris Hoff. We are now at episode number 25, and thank you for listening. I'm excited about today's episode because I run in a lot of different circles, and people know that I direct a community counseling practice in Orange County, California, called California Family Institute. And we are a community counseling practice that provide services, and nobody's turned away no matter what they can afford. And that's very important to us. But I get approached by a lot of people, students, because I do a lot of teaching, have done a lot of teaching, and get approached by students who have similar goals to, you know, maybe do a community counseling practice or to do some sort of nonprofit type agency kind of arrangement or something. And so they come to me with questions. And some I can answer and some I can't and those kinds of things. But I think this episode's really geared towards those folks that might be interested in really interested in impacting their own communities in various ways. And we're going to be meeting with the team at Pro Choices Clinic up in Vancouver, British Columbia. And the reason, you know, they caught my interest or that I wanted to reach out to Hilda Nanning, who as the founder of Pro Choices, was because they have a really interesting model. And I just, you know, it's just sometimes doing this work can be a little isolating, and you don't have easy access to go to people and talk to people sometimes. And it was kind of maybe selfish on my part to reach out and maybe really try to learn from Hilda. And maybe, and actually I walked away from this conversation really with a lot of inspiration, but I really wanted to kind of, you know, see what she was doing and how she was doing it, and really learn from it. And because those of us that are in this kind of community clinic world, we don't have a lot of opportunities to sit with each other and talk and to say, hey, these are the challenges we're facing, these kinds of things. So this was really a great opportunity for me, and I think it's going to be a great opportunity for you to learn from the team at Pro Choices Clinic in Vancouver, British Columbia, and how they're doing it up there with their particular model. And so we're going to meet, I guess I should tell you a little bit about the team. We're going to meet Hilda Nanning, who's an MSW, RSW, and RCC, and she is recognized as an effective individual couples and family counselor in Vancouver who specializes in providing therapy for women of all ages in their relationships. And she continues to be active as a therapeutic scholar and facilitator participant in local international therapy collectives, with therapy theoreticians, educators, researchers, and practitioners to ensure that she maintains a rigor of merit and professional accountability. And she is co-founder of Pro Choices. And we're going to meet a few of her team, and that would be Claire Zane Murphy, who's a current master's in is a current master's student in counseling psychology at Prescott College, and she's participating in Pro Choices certificate program as a therapist, and now is continuing to be part of the clinic from her home in Airstream in Colorado. And we're also going to meet with Laura Roscoe, who's a new therapist at Pro Choices, and she studied psychology and theater studies at McGill University. And we're going to meet with Amanda from Australia, and she's a therapist who also supports clinic management at Pro Choices, and she received a master's of counseling degree at the University of Queensland in Australia. So that's the team we're going to meet. But let me tell you a little bit, and I apologize for my voice right now. I got wiped out by something, so I'm doing the best that I can. So sorry about the voice. But anyway, let's a little bit about ProChoices, the clinic. ProChoices is a by-donation narrative therapy clinic that runs on a feminist social profit model in Vancouver, British Columbia. And the feminisms that guide ProChoices offer accessible quality therapy to individuals and communities of diverse genders, sexual orientations, and socioeconomic backgrounds. They see affordable therapy as a social justice activism and a response to the individualist, Eurocentric, hegemonic, capitalist patriarchy we live in. And ProChoices credits the clients as experts of their experience and as the authority on what constitutes meaningful change. They do not prescribe or pathologize. Instead, their therapists invite a co-research experience for their clients. This process opens up alternative ways of perceiving, responding, and resolving the challenges and problems that stand in the way of their clients' well-being. ProChoices was just an idea, but now it is a growing, thriving learning community running at full capacity. We have a wonderful opportunity to meet this team and to learn from them. So why don't we do that right now? Okay. ProChoices Clinic. Welcome to the Radical Therapist.
Hey.
Hi.
Hi, everybody. I really appreciate you taking the time to do this. We were talking a little bit offline before, and I was sharing with you that I run in a lot of circles where, you know, because I do some teaching and I speak with a lot of therapists in training, and a lot of them have a very, very much an interest in maybe doing their own community counseling clinic or impacting communities in kind of similar ways. And so I thought it would be a really great opportunity to have a conversation with people that are kind of in the trenches, so to speak, doing the work and what that experience is like. And so people can really learn, from what you're doing. So, but before I get into a bunch of questions for you all, can I maybe have everybody introduce themselves to our listeners so we know who you are?
Absolutely. So I'm Hilda Nanning, and, next to me is...
Hi, I'm Laura Orozco, and I'm new to the clinic, an incoming therapist.
Hi, Laura.
Hi, my name is Amanda. I'm a therapist at the clinic as well, and I also help with clinic admin and management. And next to me on Skyping in from Colorado is...
Go ahead.
Lindsay Murphy, and we're returning therapist. I did my practicum, my... certificate program last spring, and I'm
just
an exchange therapist.
Okay, so Claire Zane, you're coming in a bit jagged, so maybe we'll take the visual off.
We could turn both of our video off, and it'll clear the connection up.
So this is kind of a typical moment here in our training experience, because we have people coming in from different places, and we just kind of work with it.
That's great, yeah. Okay, so... Hilda, I think you are a founder or co-founder of ProChoices, and so, but before we maybe get to that, can you share a little bit about your background, how you came into this work, and maybe how you got it, how you got into narrative therapy, and then, and maybe just a little bit about your background.
Sure. Well, I really did become smitten with narrative about 15 years ago or so. And I was sort of doing what I would describe, it sounds a bit dramatic, but kind of guerrilla social work, where I would be hired to work within systems that were not always functioning in ways that I felt were supportive to anti-oppressive practice. And so would kind of have to sort of find practices and approaches that would prop me up and support me in that work, in that hard work, being in the trenches in oppressive environments and institutional discourses. So I started reading and practicing these gorgeous ideas just from articles, and played with puppets and for externalization, and just really grew more and more into the ideas. And then I started to participate in sort of self-initiated internships or apprenticeships around the world. I would sort of follow people or ask if I could hang out with them, you know, veterans of narrative therapy, and sort of learned on the ground. And I was really seeing a lot of similar colleagues that, you know, just came to this work and just really fell in love with it, and not necessarily having the community to practice in, and heading back out to isolation. So I started to play with some ideas about how I could involve sort of community practice engagement. And I also come from some community development background, and that's kind of how what brought us to this place, I think.
Yeah,
and you'll hear that the us thing a lot, because a lot of what has had my attention is the idea of other ways than working in inside individualism, and sort of collectively, and exploring those ways of working and outside the parameters of capitalism. So that was sort of what brought us to the clinic a little bit.
That's great. And we'll go into that a little bit more in a sec. But now maybe if Laura and Amanda and Claire Zane could share a little bit about what drew you to this practice, and the community kind of counseling practice, and what kind of captured your interest about it?
Laura.
Sure. My academic background is in research in clinical psychology, and in that academic training, I found a lot of things that were difficult for me to reconcile. I saw a lot of practices that felt more harmful to me than they felt helpful. And so that took me to different kinds of community work in Montreal at the time. And then when I met Hilda and was really looking for a place where I could translate the theory that I've spent so much time with into a kind of practice on foot, it felt like a very nice match for me. In the clinic now, my role will be sort of in tackling this translation from theory to practice with different kinds of initiatives working within.
That's great. And Amanda?
Yes. For me, well, academically, I also come from a psychology and a counseling background. I did my degree in Australia, and I came back to Vancouver about a year and a half ago. When I first came back, I was really craving to be part of the same kind of counseling community that I was part of in Australia. And that's basically how I stumbled upon ProChoices. I was looking for a supervisor who was in also practicing within the narrative parameters, and a community of therapists who were practicing under the same sort of worldview and model. And ProChoices really fit into what I was looking for. And on top of that, the idea of being involved in a fresh grassroots organization was just so exciting for me, and everything kind of just took off from there. Yeah.
That's great.
And passing over to Claire Zane.
Sure.
Yeah. Well, can you hear me well?
Yep.
Great. Well, I came from a small liberal arts college in the U.S. that's dedicated to social justice and environment and liberal arts. And I'm kind of on my own to find my own practicum placement. I'd done some research, and I really wasn't finding places that matched up with my worldview or that had a grassroots model. I felt uncomfortable with these larger institutions and the complications of the insurance system. And I knew I needed to do my practicum, but still just looked and came up with ProChoices. Ended up on a great adventure going up to Canada from Colorado, and really just diving in and being challenged on a lot of levels, immediately realizing, oh, I had assumptions I didn't know I had. And so, yes, I'm back at Wilderness Guide in the summer, and now I'm back with the clinic in a different capacity, and that's how I ended up here.
Yeah, that's great. Okay, so let's talk about the model. It's a very unique model, and that's kind of what captured my attention and had me to reach out to you, Hilda, was because I was really curious about the model, and it's a feminist social profit model, and I was hoping maybe you could say a little bit more about that and how that looks.
Sure. So the original sort of birth of this model showed up from, you know, my observation out there in the world, all these, as I had mentioned earlier, these, you know, just these really exciting ideas and how to sort of integrate them into something that would support a rigor of embodied learning. So there was the pedagogic sort of piece. And then there was the piece around an interest in sustaining the sort of the integrity of the principles and values of narrative and feminist work, which is really about inclusion, you know, and private practice and doing supervision for people that then come in, clients or therapists that come in and support your clients that pay big money. You know, there's a big community out there that isn't able to access quality therapy.
Yeah, right.
So that piece of it, wanting to create a clinic for everyone. And then the piece around, you know, how do we really tackle this complex and very powerful, dominant energy that just comes into every domain and you know, that likes to lure people into back to, you know, fulfilling a capitalist agenda. So even inside narrative therapy and feminist therapy, you'll see a kind of a working and a dismantling and a deconstruction of individualism inside the work. Right. So how do we, in this model, in some ways practice, invite in interaction to create a kind of a congruency that all that we do is supporting not just our therapeutic practice, but our operations and informing our infrastructure. And so the model really is an ecosystem. And there's sort of three main pieces to it: the feminist piece, the narrative piece, and the collective intention. So we don't run as a full-fledged collective, but we work collectively, and we're always exploring that. And really the synergy that comes from that is praxis. So that's another main sort of mission, is the idea of creating a space that supports and includes and privileges feminist perspective. And not just sort of, you know, narrative has been informed by feminist values and principles, obviously, but how do we really sort of bring that up front and practice that in all these different ways, along with the collectivism and along with, you know, just really supporting the learners as much and as much as we are the clients. So it's really this is a learning clinic. Yeah, that's kind of, did I answer your question?
You did, absolutely. And it makes me excited about that, you know, just the environment. I imagine you have some, I just imagine it's just an ongoing conversation you're always in conversation about how to, you know, like you said, you know, bring forward those ideas, values, principles in a world that's often going to be pushing back on it, right?
Yeah. And the worst pushback, Chris, is really the same stuff that happens in the therapy for clients that are trying to move away from problem stories that are informed by, you know, negative dominant discourses. And the pushback, the worst kind, is the insidious ones that just ignores, that devalues, that dismisses, that disqualifies, that disregards. And not to say that this is a victim position. That's just to say these are dynamics out there in the world that we're constantly bumping up against in our own experiences and coming into the room, in our, you know, the response we get from communities in this work, the understandings, the misunderstandings. Mm-hmm. So we're very grateful for having this conversation with you. Yeah.
Me too. And so I guess you kind of touched on it just now. Like what have been some of the challenges in the community? And maybe this is, you know, how have you been getting the word out? Are people finding you? How are you being acknowledged and accepted?
That's a real sort of trajectory of, you know, a continuum. You know, I one of the beautiful things about this experience for me is that it really has sustained and thrived to whatever degree, and, you know, there's lots of challenges, no doubt, but by the contributions, and I can't stress this enough, by the contributions of every single person that's had a hand. Mm-hmm. So past graduates that have moved back to Finland, Charlotte, Anna and Tia that first sort of, and Carmen that sort of attacked me with their, as they described it, aggressive enthusiasm to make this happen to the degree that it's, you know, created a the model sort of manifested itself. And so part of the work is really about these contributions, and it has a practical, pragmatic, we need it to survive. We're unfunded, and right. It's, you know, my private practice actually sponsored it for the first couple years, and that's where we're at now, where we're trying to look and we're developing a scholarship fund. Part of the challenge, I would say, one of the bigger challenges, aside from the, you know, the discourse pushback, as you described it, is not being able to just give away all the this learning.
Yeah.
Right. You know, to free, you know, so we give away 80% of it, but even, and it's still not, I mean, we're breaking even pretty much. The social profit piece of it really is that we are being paid, you know, we are getting paid through the social, through the benefits of having this meaningful experience and, you know, privileging 250 clients this far, you know, to support their accessing this quality work and connecting with each other. So the challenges are, I think, in, you know, we just keep trying to find ways to address them. So the recent one is we're looking for funding for a scholarship program. Mm. And we have plans and have been invited to actually develop sister clinics, sort of mentorship support in other places. And one of them, actually, Claire is kind of working on researching a sister clinic in the Oregon or in the Colorado area.
Great.
So, yeah, I mean, I don't know if Claire wants to say anything or if any of the you guys have anything to add to my little ramble there.
Sure. Well, as you were saying, challenges are always popping up, and we are always sort of adapting and learning as part of the process of being at the clinic. And even the model of the clinic sometimes changes and is right now in discussion a little bit, and there's a lot of collective work towards finding what is working, what isn't working, and how can we sort of bring in each of our different resources to be able to shape the clinic, to keep shaping the clinic. Mm-hmm. In ways that will keep fostering us, fostering the ability for us to do the work and to give out care.
I'm really excited about Laura's project this term. So she's exploring, researching, and developing something called, we've developed, that's called Council. Hmm. It's kind of a almost like, I don't know, do you want to talk a little bit about
it? Sure. I mean, I feel kind of funny using the word elders because of all of its many connotations and also the age piece, but it's, we're in the process of developing now a council, a consulting council for the clinic as a way of fine-tuning the way that we distribute labor, fine-tuning the way that we distribute also like pedagogical roles, teaching roles, and how we can sustain an ethics within the community of the clinic as people come and go and the learning reshapes itself. Because a lot of us coming into the clinic now are newer to narrative, not new to therapy or to caregiving specifically. Mm. But there is always a big, big learning piece, and it's important to be able to continue the learning and not start back from a beginner's perspective constantly.
Yeah, and council really is sort of a response to supporting, you know, our personal marginalization, if that's, you know, there's this constant sort of need to re-explain and reiterate, you know, why are we asking people to, for example, pay for a certificate program therapist, professional development therapist, or even some of the practicum students if they're not scholarshiped in or they're not doing an exchange program. So there's three different ways to sort of be involved at coming in, or four now. We keep adding and expanding to the point. But, you know, we kind of, I think I lost my train of thought there.
Okay. I can pipe in if you want.
Okay, jump in.
Sure. For me, the idea of the council is also
right.
A practical move away from individualism, which is a theme that comes up with us
right.
really regularly, and which is personally very important and exciting for me,
mm-hmm.
and which I guess can also lead me into a challenge of mine, which is nervousness, and which I'm... you know, repeatedly reminding myself can be sort of the voice of a capitalist, individualist, mm-hmm. authority role that someone else would be more qualified or would have mm-hmm. more right to be in a role of power when, you know, within the workings of the clinic, we can give ourselves the roles of power. We can interchange mm-hmm. and play. And
Gloria just... gorgeously sort of presented, you know, something that shows and reveals a little bit the ecosystem opportunity, because as we'll sort of maybe have conversations about nervousness, you know, we're moving into narrative land. So we're practicing our practice.
Yes, right.
So that's the rigor piece. We're constantly using all that we do to practice and gain skills and sharpen our rapport, mm-hmm. our repertoire, our rapport with the feminist narrative theories and tools. Amanda or Claire, did you have anything you wanted to add to that?
Actually, I was going to say something similar to what you had said.
Yeah?
Just sitting here listening to you two talking about some of the challenges that we have experienced over the past year and a half. It just makes me think that every time a small challenge or a big challenge pops up, somehow us as a team have been using it as a great opportunity to practice this model that we've been, you know, trying very hard to adhere to. And it's actually because of these challenges that keep popping up that we are able to, you know, stay really close to the model that that began this whole thing. So yeah, in a way, thanks to these challenges that we're still around.
There strong opportunity yeah. to really refine the skills, the approach,
exactly.
the orientation, the worldview to really embody it. Yeah.
Live the practice.
Yeah, it's the practice. And that really is the mission and the commitment. It's really about getting good at this.
Right. And together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I just wanted to ask if Claire Zane had anything she wanted to say or felt excited to say or
I think the individualism definitely has been a big challenge, and really learning what that means for me too. I've noticed that it's very seductive within our culture of capitalism. It has this very passive quality to it, and something that seems helpful in building community. Problems do fester in isolation. They seem a lot bigger and scarier. I'm really excited about, I came to Pro Choices to really learn about this grassroots model and bring it back home. I live in a very small farming village that's really, really exploding in ideas and thoughts and really people. And there's a definite need for mental health care. And I was really passionate to learn the grassroots model, and I'm learning that the theory, the scaffolding of this really integral theory is really crucial. So it's really cool to have community to explore what that could look like to have an international community of grassroots clinics who are figuring out what this means while being mentored, while being in dialogue together, and learning that we can really allow each question to build upon the previous questions, which is how narrative therapy works. We can do that in how we build community, which I find very beautiful.
Yeah, that was nice. Yeah. Okay, so what might you all tell others that would hope to do something very similar? What kind of, I guess, insider knowledge or wisdom would you want to pass on? Because I'm sure there's people listening to this that are going to be listening to this that are going to be really inspired, and they're going to want to, you know, do something similar maybe in their own community. So how might you guide them?
Right.
I think the first thing that pops up to my mind would be, and I think Hilda and I had a brief conversation about this the other day, was that to really just stay close to your intentions and always remind yourself, why is it that I got involved in this, or why is it that I want to start this incredibly beautiful but at the same time very difficult project.
It's very ambitious. Thank you, Amanda. Like, in regards to sustaining intention, you know, in a world that doesn't necessarily embrace it. We have had wonderful response. We're hearing some action here in Vancouver going on in the streets. Garbage truck movement. So I think, you know, kind of community development principles can be very helpful to fall back on the idea of, first and foremost, you know, really having mechanisms that continue to support and validate internally your own reasons and missions and purpose, because this is slippery work, you know, as you probably can attest, Chris, you know, when you go out there in the world, and, you know, people might not be responding to your deconstruction of power, you know, right? So that's a big piece. I would say absolutely, you know, consult with with the insiders. So consult with us, you know, reach out, connect to our experiences. This is meaningful work that's really driven from a place of wanting to better the situation of folks that are othered and marginalized, whether, you know, that includes people not accessing quality therapy or feminists wanting to really voice and give shape to that in the work. You know, or a feminist-run organization that isn't entirely understood, you know, that kind of thing. So reach out to others. And when you are ignored or disqualified or disregarded, you know, just look at the many others that have the same story. You know, Rosa, who sat on the black woman that sat on the bus, you know, the courage that it can, that you can find support from through history, through to just do something that's different. So find your supports, reiterate your, and revisit your mission quite often. Anything else you'd add to that?
I would add read and learn and listen all that you can.
Yeah.
And let your own experiences be one of those resources. Listen to the way that you are interacting with the things that you're consulting as resources and see what comes out of that. Because, you know, we never really know what new exciting thing is going to come.
Yes. So such an important point. So basically our main consultants are our clients, right?
Right.
Yeah. And our therapists, you know, I just had a huge learning yesterday myself, you know, it just never stops, this exchange, this collaborative exchange. Claire, is there anything you would add to that?
I've been learning to really trust in the narrative process and asking questions, and able to gather testimony from clients was powerful to see the impact that this hard work has had on people in the community, and having it be available to people and break some of those barriers that make it not available usually. So So as I pictured this, I thought of the movie The Field of Dreams, this idea of build it and they will come. It seems that people within a year of this clinic being built really were interested. One of our problems was the size of the wait list. A lot of people who are seeking something like this. So I think the trust in the work itself and what can unfold, that we don't even know what that will look like. But the process of peeling away assumptions and having that shared relationship seems like something that can be leaned upon.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. That's a really good point. You know, the practice is probably the biggest supporter of all, you know, the learning.
Yeah. And I Hilda, in saying, you know, that going back to your mission over and over again, it really resonates with me, doing California Family Institute and, you know, sometimes, you know, you just get off track and you find yourself out in a field somewhere and you're like, how did I get here? And,
right.
And I really like that idea of like, you know, the community is, I think Claire said it about this idea of isolation and how important community is, and revisiting, you know, why we're doing what we're doing and the importance of it. And like you said, in this world, sometimes it happens to me. I know that I get pulled off track and get captured by certain things. And then even just having this conversation with you right now is really inspirational to me. And it's like like a reminder of like, oh, this is why I'm doing what I'm doing. Right.
Yeah. And that was sort of the appreciation about the reach out, Chris, from you. You know, it's like, it's great to connect to others that, you know, do this hard work. It's brave practice.
Yeah.
And so thank you for that. It's great.
Okay, so a few more questions for y'all. How is the clinic, if you can say something about it, I know you've all kind of shared about this already, but, you know, how is the clinic transforming your own work? Or, how's it looking differently?
Great question. How's that going? We have regular Sunday school here, we have opportunity to just meet as a group and really sort of dive into the practice and work. You know, it's not a training institution; it's really a practice learning community. And as people have said earlier, it's almost sort of like grounded theory or participatory action research, where we're, whatever sort of shows up in my one-to-one supervision with everyone, I will sort of take the themes and then sort of create another sort of collective theme agenda of sorts for our group work, which inevitably sort of has its own organic movement. And that's kind of how we work. So the successes and the progress and the process successes continue to inform the learning. And so I don't know if that's really an abstract kind of, it is absolutely introduction. So how would you say this far, maybe Claire, you know, from last semester to now, what are some things that you've noticed concretely that have sort of developed or caught your attention in the practice?
I love transparency. That so often in the counseling field, we're not transparent. There's this whole thick veil of mystery around what actually goes on.
Right.
And when somebody asks me what I do, I feel like I can say I'm a learner and I'm a new therapist. I'm finishing my master's and I'm learning around feminist narrative therapy, which acknowledges that the personal is political, the political is personal. We externalize the problem story. We get to know it and its effects. So I have this sense of being able to share learning, which has been huge in my master's program, to be able to interact with the other students in their learning and really from them by asking narrative questions. They've really excited about questions that start asking in my practicum course of when they're seeing clients, when they're asking for back or what is being heard. So that's been really cool to integrate my learning. And of course, it's impacted just throughout the personal relationships too. and, you know, wilderness with youth, I found myself asking their questions, which was beautiful, really beautiful.
Sweet. Mm-hmm. And the transparency piece is, you know, again, we draw our consideration and our exploration from, you know, that as a feminist value. And then narrative, you know, and principle and narrative kind of, you know, will inform us further about how do we work with that by not privileging our own story in the room. So there's this wonderful sort of relationship between the feminist kind of grounding and the narrative that we know and we continue to learn about, you know, informing each other in a way that grounds us, gives us some parameters about when does transparency work and in what ways, and, you know, yeah.
That's great.
Any other topics or themes that show up as far as kind of areas you've developed and been challenged by or progressed in?
I think the word appreciation pops up as Claire Zane was describing her experience with transparency. I've been with ProChoices for a little over a year now. Eh? Mm-hmm. Wow, time flies. So yeah, I think over the past year or so, I've had the privilege to work with a group of, you know, just amazing, intelligent, beautiful women, both as colleagues and the clients that I've worked with. And the one thing that constantly showed up was appreciation. Mm-hmm. In our practice, at least myself, tend to forget to, you know, to take a pause and appreciate what's the process and what's been done. And here, being a part of ProChoices and the learning cohort, you know, every other week we meet together as, you know, and as part of our mentorship, we stop and appreciate each other for what we've done. And and it's a great chance to review how far we've come and look ahead into what else that needs to be done. I don't know if I'm going off topic a little bit.
I love that point because, you know, like, again, there's it brings to mind for me the opportunity of this ecosystem and how it works. So here we have this kind of cohort and clinic sort of a practice of appreciation that's actually supporting this as a foundation in our therapeutic practice, in our therapeutic conversations. So we're just getting to know the details of that so that the habit of it, the way of it, starts to integrate and flow more fluently. So fluency is really a big goal, as is congruency, as is integrity and humility. Those are kind of things we reach for in how we're handling ourselves in the clinic and in the challenges and the progress and also in the therapy room and in our interpersonal kind of experiences. Mm-hmm. Thanks, Amanda.
Yeah.
Okay, I have another question, and this is I'm always curious about, because, you know, I just am interested in what's influencing you all, and that is, you know, what is influencing you all? What are you reading, or what's capturing your attention? And would you be willing to share something that's, you know, of interest?
Yeah, that's a great question. So because we're not a training facility, you know, we invite therapists that are applying to do a lot of reading and then select 5 articles that appeal, and to go to all of our veteran therapists that offer any kind of online or local training to access that, so that not only before they apply or once they're accepted and part of the sort of prereqs in a way, but also while. And so part of that encouragement is also poetry. It's also novels. It's also theory about, you know, things that are inspiring you or being revealed as maybe that are informing some of the problems that are coming into the room. You know, the issue of labor, as Clara was talking about. She was really excited with some reading I bumped into her, and she's like, I'm heading to the beach with 5 articles on this, you know, So I'll let you guys speak a little bit to what's captured your attention right now, maybe, or before in regards to some reading, or...
Sure. I mean, I am laughing at myself now because I am the newcomer, and I'm almost chomping at the bit, keen. And Hilda also described me as a theory nerd earlier, which rings pretty true. So
I'm one of those two.
Cool. So I, I'm particularly interested in labor right now, leaving a slightly broader abstract set of reading that I've been doing for the past few years as part of being in school. Now I'm reading, if I can say names, I guess.
Sure.
I'm reading a little bit of Wendy Brown's writing around neoliberalism. Mm. I am also listening to the Now You Can Go feminist conference in Italy. I think it happened in 2015. They have a bunch of great lectures and talks on YouTube, specifically about feminism and labor and gendered spaces. So that has been my past couple of days.
Amanda? She doesn't have any time to read this one. This one is our octopus. Or she's like a Siamese octopus. She's got 16 arms. Or
I guess maybe that's pretty telling, though, right? Like, I haven't been as immersed in the world of the clinic as much. And so maybe my energy to bring in the reading is to be able to put it in conversation.
From my experience, it's just waves. Yeah, I mean, I have times. I've got like 10 books by my bed and articles all over the place that I've read a paragraph on. And but Amanda?
Yeah, I think you were basically describing my days right now.
Yeah. How about you, Claire? Is there any reading that you're kind of smitten with right now?
Yeah, there's some articles shared through Pro Choices that I've looked at some of the titles and just fall in love with what I've read about starting narrative practice and what are some of the, how do these different things come together? Katrina Brown, Alex Morgan were some people who I really loved this week. In school right now, I'm reading Crazy Like Us, The Globalization of the American Psyche, that's Ethan Milford's, and that's been pretty radical, and in the social justice class, the first one Prescott College has ever actually done for their master's program, and that's been amazing to do after having been immersed in a narrative feminist practice. I also find just being really experiential is sometimes I go through waves of not reading and being really with the group learning process and interviewing people in the cohort and really just diving into the experience. Sometimes it goes through ebbs and flows of being in reading and then being in the experience.
Thank you, Claire. You know, that whole point of, we do a lot of sort of researching with each other, interviewing and partnering and witnessing in the room. We also have sort of invented this really cool experience where we'll have multiple voices when we're doing our practices of, you know, the client voice in character of a client story, problem story, problem identity, you know, the therapist voice, and then maybe the learner or teacher voice, and sort of all sort of intersecting in a practice where somebody will interview and you'll have these three sort of voices and you'll describe experiences that are going, oh, I like that question, I didn't like that question. I was sort of want, you know, you're having this multiple, which supports the kind of the play of the double story work. So anyway, we do a lot of internal research as well. And and I would love to see more writing. I'm always trying to push for that. But, you know, yeah. I don't practice walk the talk myself. So
it's hard. Okay. One final question. Well, I got two final questions. But what are the plans for the future? What do you see out on the horizon? What are you excited about in regards to the clinic? I know you have a lot of stuff, it sounds like, in the works. Anything you want to mention?
Mm-hmm. Survival is a good one.
Yeah, right. Yeah, always, yeah. Always.
That's kind of, you know, at the top of our list. And you know, there are times where we're wondering, you know, how we can keep it all going. So we need some revenue to sort of come in. And so we're working on that. The scholarship program really has excites me. I'd love to be just giving this away, you know, so if we can somehow get some funds to do that. The sister clinic ideas, community involvement, those are sort of the three areas. Anything else, guys? Or
I think under the community involvement bracket, we've been trying to work on developing a few workshops, both for local universities and for community service centers. So I'm pretty excited about that.
Yeah, that's actually a good one to mention. That's a whole lot of fun because, you know, you asked the question earlier about reading, and that's a place to sort of harvest some of the ideas. Yes. And I love supporting that workshop development with the therapists. So that's active right now.
So how do listeners find you? How do they support you? Is there a website? How do they connect with you?
So prochoices.ca is the website. And on there is a way to sort of get in touch with if you're a therapist interested in being involved. And we've got program descriptions of the exchange program, the scholarship program, and then the professional development program. Also, we have a new therapist on board that's developing sort of a volunteer program. She's interested in developing a social work program specifically, which I'm really excited about. So loads of opportunities to be involved in multiple different ways, and we're just constantly inviting in interested people, so just give us an email and we will respond.
And we're also on Facebook.
Yes, yeah. And we're on Facebook.
And I'll have all these links on the show notes, listeners, just so you can easily access them. And I'm thinking one of the things, I'm going to throw something out at you. You should maybe have a gathering for other clinics.
Oh wow, that's a wonderful idea.
Yeah, invite everybody up to Vancouver and we can all go come up there and commiserate together and support each other and do something like that, because this is in a short period of time with you. I'm serious, I feel pretty inspired. So
that's awesome, Chris. Yeah. I mean, I'm really inspired to hear more about what you got going, and thank you for that last idea.
Yes.
Let's do it.
Because I will come. I promise.
Okay.
I will come.
Let's do that.
I love Vancouver, too. So.
I love the idea. Awesome. Okay. Yes. We've got a plan.
All right. Thank you. I just want to say thank you, everybody, for taking the time out of your schedules and to chat with me and our listeners. And I know this is going to be inspiring for others that are looking for community, have hopes to do something very similar in their own communities. And I just think it's been a really valuable conversation. So I want to thank you all for that. So
thank you so much for having us.
Yeah, it was really fun.
Yep. Thank you guys.
Okay. Bye, Chris.
Well, that's our show. And I want to thank you all for listening as always. And you can always find us on the web. We have a website at theradicaltherapist.com. We're on Instagram at @theradicaltherapist. On Twitter at the Rad Therapist. And please reach out to us and always shoot me an email too if you want to be in contact with me at theradicaltherapist@gmail.com. If you want stickers, Radical Therapist stickers, I'd be happy to send them out to you. Just shoot me an email and be happy to do that. And please spread the word. Share our podcast with your friends on your various social media outlets. We would really appreciate that. And getting the word out about our particular way of talking about therapy out there in the world. So we appreciate you listening. My name is Chris Hoff. This has been the Radical Therapist Podcast.